morning, afternoon, and night, folks. I am Jake Mosier, and this is the Super Mosier Brothers Show, a podcast where two brothers and best friends take their lifelong passion in talking about video games away from the family dinner table and to the microphone. I am once again alone. Sam has left me stranded by myself in the tarnished Kingdom of Hyrule, left to save Link all alone. Yes, I will be solo reviewing The Legend of Zelda Echoes of Wisdom today. Sam is currently in San Francisco for GDC doing stuff for his lovely video games related job. So he is out for this week. That is okay. I have wanted to do a solo review for a little bit. As many of you heard on a show earlier this year, I had planned to do a solo review for Star Wars Outlaws. Unfortunately, by the time the schedule opened up for that, too much time had passed, and I don't think that episode would have been interesting for you to listen to. So I am here, I am back, and I am going to review The Legend of Zelda Echoes of Wisdom. Before I get into that, how are you doing? Are you okay? Are you making it through 2025? It's been a year, folks. Every day, a new headline that makes my eyebrows go up, that make my heart drop, that make me want to snap my phone and throw it out the window. I do want to caveat this episode that I am recording this in my apartment alone, which means I do not have assistance with the dog. So if the dog goes to ring the bell, or starts biting my ankles, or viciously humping my leg, I will be pausing, stopping, I will do my best to edit it out, or maybe I'll leave it in if it's funny for you all. We will see. But I hope you're doing well. I hope you're making it through. This year has been a mix of high highs and really, really low lows, so I hope the year continues to get better for everyone. I hope you all are playing some good-ass games. I know Assassin's Creed Shadows comes out soon. I'm very excited for that. I'm still playing Monster Hunter Wilds and having an excellent time there. There's no better way to end a day than to kill some goofy-looking... Last night was like a lizard mixed with a butterfly, mixed with a bird. It was very cool. But all of that aside, I've done enough preamble. Thank you to anyone who's listening. It means so much. If you enjoy our show, subscribe to it in your podcast feeds, leave us a review, share it with your friends. It would mean the galaxy to us. Guys, gals, everyone, let's get into The Legend of Zelda, Echoes of Wisdom. If you are unaware, if you somehow forgot, I wouldn't blame you. There's a lot going on. It is a 2024 action-adventure game developed by Nintendo and Grezzo, and published by Nintendo for the Switch. It is the first mainline Legend of Zelda game with Princess Zelda as the main playable character. Players control Zelda on a quest to save Link and the Kingdom of Hyrule using the Tri-Rod, a magical artifact provided by the fairy Tri, who assists her. The visual style is similar to that of the 2019 remake, The Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening, which Grezzo also developed. Echoes of Wisdom was released to generally favorable reviews. If you somehow forgot, this game came out last year. I think in September. I'm currently trying to move over to the proper screen, but due to the constructions of my desk, it's very hard to position the microphone, the laptop, and my second screen in a solid place, but we eventually got there. This came out on September 26th of last year. It was arguably the big Switch title of the fall last year. It was the big surprise at last year's either spring or summer direct. And while I don't think it necessarily set the world on fire, it's a Zelda game. I had interest. I wanted to give it a try. So what do I think of The Legend of Zelda Echoes of Wisdom? Before I get into that, I think it's important to give my full history for the Legend of Zelda franchise. Obviously, this being the first one where Zelda is playable is a pretty big landmark for the franchise, and due to that and its placement in the 2D side of Zelda, which really hasn't had a brand new entry since, I think, Link to the Past on 3DS. Apologies if you heard the shaking. Like I said, I am alone with my dog, so he is in the room with me, staring out the window, eating a pillow. But I think it's important to get into my history to understand how I felt about this game, where I think they could maybe go with this formula in the future, how this relates to the games I have played, etc., etc. So, Zelda history, starting off. I didn't play Zelda, really play Zelda, until Breath of the Wild. So that would have been 2017. I was 17 years old. We'll get to why I think that is important to how I feel about this game a little later on. But my history of Zelda starts with watching Sam play Twilight Princess on the Wii and Wind Waker technically on the Wii. I would have been, I would have been 5 or 6 at the time when he dabbled with these games. They were so full of wonder. They were some of my favorite games to watch. The amount of times I personally replayed the opening to Twilight Princess and watched Sam replay the opening, from that world design to the music, I would say most importantly the music, to just the sense of adventure that these games give you. They do the hero's journey, not necessarily in terms of narrative, but in terms of video game mission arc really well. You start off in this small village, and then you start to talk to some people, you get the story of the world, and then you get your horse, and then you venture to this first area, which isn't too extravagant, but it has some cool monsters, and then that just elevates and elevates and elevates, and then all of a sudden at the end you're fighting a demon god with like fire and tornadoes swirling around you, and it's this crazy batshit ending. And all of the games kind of follow that similar format. I wouldn't say Echoes of Wisdom maybe reaches the, I don't actually take that back. It does reach some pretty crazy heights at the end of the game. Not necessarily my favorite, but ones that definitely deserve some sort of credit. Apologies if my thoughts across this podcast feel a bit scattershot or all over the place. Only 6 minutes in did my dog ring the bell, and I have to take him outside. Doing this alone, not the podcast, but the dog stuff, does make the podcasting a bit more difficult. But let's get back into my history with Zelda. So I watched Sam play Twilight Princess and Wind Waker. Was very fond of those secondhand experiences. In terms of what I had dabbled in myself prior to Breath of the Wild, were two handheld games, Phantom Hourglass and Ocarina of Time 3D on the 3DS. I probably played somewhere between 2 to 4 hours of each of those games. That is by no means a criticism of those games. I just frankly had a short attention span as a child, and while the wonder of the Zelda games pulled me in from afar, they didn't necessarily pull me in personally, which is very funny that I had a positive experience watching those games, those being Twilight Princess and Wind Waker, but not necessarily the best time playing them with Phantom Hourglass and Ocarina of Time 3D. I remember enjoying those, but at a time where I was so busy with sports and school and just hanging out with friends, I found myself pulled away from these games as they weren't great games to take weeks, months apart from and then try to get back into. They really are games that you sink your teeth into, at least in my opinion. And so up until Breath of the Wild, I really didn't have much personal affinity for playing these games. I loved the character of Link and Zelda. I loved the world that this franchise had built up, but personally, I didn't have much experience with the franchise itself. So jumping into Breath of the Wild, you've heard me talk about this game enough. One of my favorite games of all time, one of the best games ever made, has truly changed how I talk about games, how I feel about games, definitely how I feel about open world games. Absolutely adore that game. Then, after my love for the franchise went from maybe 25 to 100 very quickly, when Link's Awakening remake was announced for the Switch, I was ecstatic. It was an opportunity to jump into an older Zelda game that I'd heard about, one that would be refreshed and renewed with this new art style on the Switch, and I liked that game quite a lot. I think it is, despite me not having much experience with the franchise prior to playing it, a nice deviation from the typical structure or typical cliches, almost, so to say, of a Zelda game. I think that game is delightful, and I think the art style that Grezzo chose was actually quite lovely. Yes, it has its frame rate issues, but I don't think that really takes away from the joy of Link's Awakening. Jump to a few years later, maybe 1 to 2 years later, Sam and I played Link to the Past for this podcast. You heard my opinions there, so I'm not going to reiterate them here. I think it is a good game, one that definitely, at least in my opinion, I wouldn't say hasn't aged well. I still think it plays very well, but I think due to not only where Zelda has gone in the future, but many video games have gone, I think there is an unnecessary amount of quote-unquote backtracking of trying to find a certain item and then go talk to a certain person without as much direction as I personally would like in this kind of game. There are games where I like not being given direction and having to search and explore and figure stuff out for yourself. I don't know. A Zelda game is not really what it's not why I go to Zelda. Next, Skyward Sword. Again, you have heard my opinions on this podcast. I did not love that game. My expectations, I wouldn't say were high. I know this is not one of the most beloved entries in the franchise, but after how much I loved Breath of the Wild, I was excited to return to what 3D Zelda looked like prior to that, and, well, I was disappointed. It doesn't feel great to play. I thought the dungeon design was laborious, maybe more tedious than laborious. What I found laborious was the time before the dungeon and all the steps you have to take to get into there. So I ultimately found myself disappointed by Skyward Sword. And then enter Tears of the Kingdom, a game I have talked about a lot in the last 2 years. It is probably my favorite game of all time. Just mesmerizing and transportive in a way almost no other game is. So with all of that in mind, having loved Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom, having really liked Link's Awakening, and having a range of opinions on Link to the Past and Skyward Sword, where did I fall on Echoes of Wisdom? Well, to kind of place it within all of those games we just talked about, I would place it right below, drum roll, Link's Awakening. I think this game is very good. I enjoy this game quite a lot. For a roughly a 20-hour game, one that is significantly longer than Link's Awakening, I found myself smiling and enjoying myself till the very end. Do I think it has pacing issues? Do I think it is a little too long? 100%. I do not think this game had the juice, so to say, to sustain itself over a 20 to 25-hour game length, period of time, etc. But it is a good game. I think it does a really good job taking what made Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom, that freedom to solve and explore the way you want to solve and explore, and transitioning that from 3D into 2D. Do I think it's perfect? No. I definitely think this is a stepping stone to a better sequel. Many people always talk about Uncharted 1 to Uncharted 2, Assassin's Creed to Assassin's Creed 2, and it seems weird to talk about that in the framing of Zelda, a franchise that has been around about as long as any other video game franchise has been around, but I do think that there is potential for a massive step up from a Zelda-led Echoes of Wisdom 1 to another Zelda-led Echoes of Wisdom 2. I'm presuming it would have a different subtitle, but that's irrelevant here. Similar to how Tears of the Kingdom took a massive step forward after Breath of the Wild, I think there's an opportunity here to kind of get further into that. The main mechanic of Echoes of Wisdom, if you are unaware, are the said echoes. They are essentially mimics of almost every item in the game. There are 127 echoes that basically, when you destroy or find said enemy or item, Zelda can use her tri-rod and basically take a picture, screenshot it, and put it into her 3D printer. And then at any moment, she can bring these objects into the world. No, it is not unlimited. You have what I'm just going to call echo power that slowly gets increased across the game the more you do more dungeons and these kind of other world segments. You get more power, you can bring more echoes into the world at once. It decreases the amount of echo power it takes to use certain items. That is one of the few upgrade paths of this game. But ultimately, I think the echoes work well. They evolve 2D Zelda to not only be closer to a Breath of the Wild, but into something more, something that I think definitely improved exploration. While Link's Awakening is a delightful game, and there is definitely exploration there. It did not feel exploration first. That did not feel like the priority of that game. It did feel like you were bouncing from dungeon to dungeon, area to area. Gotta find this person to get this item. Similar to Link to the Past, to be honest. I just found the casing of it a little more interesting. In Echoes of Wisdom, some of that is kind of blown open in... I can't remember if it's the first year. I've been playing this game over the course of 3 months, but I can say, at least for the second half of the game, you are given the freedom to choose what order you would like to go in. You are not forced down a dungeon path. You are presented, I think, 3 dungeons in the first half and 3 dungeons in the second half, and you could attack them in any order you would like, which I think is really nice in terms of giving you player freedom. I think it also weaves really well into the increased sense of exploration they provide in the game in general. Yes, it is a 2D Zelda game. Yes, there are quote-unquote barriers between areas, but the cool thing about this game is those barriers are facades. They're not real. Once you have a certain level of echo ability, you can build a bed tower or a cloud bridge and climb over those barriers, which is really neat because it kind of defies expectations for what you expect from other Zelda games. One of my favorite moments was I was in the kind of ocean region, the big lake region, and I reached the edge of the lake and I was surrounded by pretty high palm trees. And I was like, damn, I guess this is the end. And I thought, well, what if I build a way to get over it? And so I built a way to get over it and I appeared in the rainforest region, which isn't something that you could do in Zelda games before. You were forced to walk around and find your way there every time instead of kind of finding your own path, which I thought was really neat. The ways in which the echoes don't work as well is really harmful to this game in comparison to Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom, especially Tears of the Kingdom, a game that gives you the freedom to almost do anything you want, to explore any way you want, to solve everything any way you want. Obviously, it is not literally that. It is not limitless, but it feels that way. While I did find myself falling into using similar techniques across puzzles in Tears of the Kingdom, I never felt like those got tiresome or lost their wonder. I never lost the satisfaction of solving something a fucked up way, a way that I don't really think the developers intended. Obviously, I probably used the same techniques, but it never felt repetitive. That is not necessarily the case in Echoes of Wisdom. While there are 127 echoes, and there are a lot of ways to play with things, and I'm sure there are a lot of echoes that I did not use to their full extent, that I missed out a really cool way to defeat an enemy or explore a certain area or solve a puzzle, you often fall into the same echoes. You find the 15 to 20 echoes that really are of use to you, and you kind of use those over and over again. And I will say, and one of the reasons why I think a sequel would be greatly beneficial to this style of game, is I would imagine it's very hard to design a 2D game in the style of a 3D game. There is just inherently less freedom in a top-down 2D Zelda. You are literally missing an entire plane of existence. And it's hard to put systems in place where you as the player can feel as limitless as you do in a 3D space. That all saying, just because it maybe wasn't possible doesn't take away from the repetitiveness that you start to feel, I would say, around the 10 to 15 hour mark, where you have kind of got the echoes that you are going to predominantly use. And don't get me wrong, the game does a good job of laying out those echoes throughout the entire game. Even towards the end, you're still getting new enemies to use in combat, which is really neat that they didn't kind of burn out on those very quickly. But you kind of run out of use cases for echoes. You run out of new fresh ideas. Often, some of the echoes you get function very similar to echoes you got earlier in the game. They're just new variations or versions of the same thing. I do think it fixes one of my issues I have with 2D Zelda, and even 3D Zelda of the past, which is it feels so constrained. I wish every game could feel like Breath of the Wild, Tears of the Kingdom, with the sense of freedom those games have, and I understand that's just not doable, and wouldn't necessarily be great for every game, but I think the Zelda franchise works really well with that, and I'm happy to see the 2D versions of these games embrace that. Obviously, I already stated the moment where I was able to climb over the area barrier and go to a whole different area. That was really neat. It was really cool finding which enemy echoes that you could kind of combo together to defeat other enemies. I thought that was neat. There are definitely some moments, some cool puzzles where you can kind of cheat what the foundation of the puzzle is. It's pretty obvious that you're supposed to use a specific echo or that you're supposed to traverse a certain way. And instead, I used a floating tile that shot me across the way and kind of skipped everything. And I think that stuff, that quote-unquote emergent gameplay, that stuff that feels unique to your experience, is really, really cool. That is my conversation about the echoes. What kind of relates to the echoes is the combat. Zelda can't really fight. There is an ability where you can turn into Link for a short amount of time, and you have a sword, and eventually you unlock other items for that Link ghost, so to say. But mostly combat is summoning echoes of enemies that you have killed and having them fight other enemies. And again, relating to the length of this game, while I think that works for 10 to 15 hours, it is not sustainable across 20 hours. By the last 5 hours, it gets a bit tedious just placing down your favorite enemies and running around in circles, avoiding getting hit. It is just inherently not as engaging as traditional combat. I really would love to see them design a way for Zelda to participate in concert with the Echoes. I think even if Zelda's maybe a little underpowered, and then you have the Echoes kind of benefit you almost as like summons, I think that would be really neat. But I think as is, it's just not sustainable for 20 to 25 hours of gameplay. But there are a lot of echoes. Like I said, there are 127 echoes. Obviously, all of those are not things you can use for combat, but they all are there. And it does help keep it relatively fresh for most of the game that you are unlocking new enemy types, whether they have electric abilities or fire abilities or freezing abilities, and kind of using those to tackle combat in different ways is nice. It's ultimately not the way I prefer to play games. I think a big question people had for this game was, how does it feel as Zelda's first big title? This franchise has been around for a long time. It is called The Legend of Zelda, and you have not had the opportunity to really get to play as her. She's a pretty iconic video game character. It's about fucking time. Do I think that this is a great first title as a Zelda game? I would say a resounding hell yes. A game that also came out in 2024, earlier in March, a Nintendo title, Princess Peach's Showtime. Princess Peach's had a game before. She had the game on the DS that was not great to my knowledge. And the one on the Switch also was not great. Yes, geared to a different audience. I think it was geared to a much younger audience. And I'm sure some kids and teens got a kick out of that game. But it did feel a little lackluster to at least what I heard from most people. This does not feel lackluster. This feels like a full-blown Zelda game. Like I said, it is bigger than a lot of the other 2D Zelda games, and I think it feels full. It feels loved. It feels intentional, and I'm happy that they are giving these quote-unquote side characters main games. I do think it was an odd choice to have the only form of ownable combat be in the form of like a Link ghost. You're basically just transforming into Link. I think it's a weird decision. I understand why they did it. If you play the game, I think you'll understand it too. I think you probably could have just given Zelda like a unique sword and have that thing be on a timer and have it function equally as well. But that aside, I think this is a great format for Zelda. I would love to see Zelda just be the 2D character for a while, and every 2D Zelda game we get is where you play as Zelda. I think definitely they should do a sequel where you have the Echoes, and they should expand it and do something new with it. I would love to see that. I don't know if that's necessarily what we will get, but I think this is its own lane now, and they should expand upon it. I think while the story is ultimately fine, I would say it's arguably disappointing because Tears of the Kingdom was the first Zelda game I played where I was wowed by the story. I was intrigued. I was compelled. I think it is, I know a lot of people disagree. I think it's one of the best delivery systems for a story I've ever seen in the, what I'm going to call echo puddles that you find throughout that game. The story here is pretty consistent with what every Zelda story is. There's a dark force. You got to get things to stop the dark force. You talk to quirky town characters. You make some friends. And all of that stuff is neat. The story is good enough. It's ultimately something tacked on to a project that I honestly wish was thinned down. There's a lot of dialogue. I don't care that it's not voice acted, but I don't come to these games for the story. And it was quite draining, especially in the end. There are moments where you can't skip. And by that, I don't mean fully skip the dialogue. I mean, I'm just a fast reader. I would like to move on once I've read the sentence or sentences that the character is saying. And unfortunately, it didn't let you do that at times, and that became frustrating. I ultimately don't think that's a negative for this game. Like I said, I don't play these games for that. It's just fine. It is there. I think Zelda as a character is good enough. She's nothing special, but Link is nothing special. That's not what these games are for. One of the big things that I'm sure a lot of people were excited about to return to 2D Zelda are the dungeons. There are, I think, 8 dungeons in this game. Maybe there's more than that. So there's the Southern Ruins, the Jabal Ruins, the Gerudo Sanctum, the Hyrule Castle, Elden Temple, Farron Temple, Lanyiru Temple, and Null's Body. So there are 8 dungeons. And I would say overall, they are good. I wasn't wowed by any of them. I don't think, due to the way this game is structured with the echoes, weirdly enough, and I know this might sound disappointing to most people, but I ultimately still enjoyed it. Because this game is centered around the echoes, which are meant to encourage exploration of mechanics, freedom, etc., it almost makes the dungeons more limiting in terms of their scope. If you go back to even Link's Awakening, and most Zelda games, dungeons tend to be built around a gimmick, around a mechanic, two mechanics, that if done right can be wondrous. I think of the Link's Awakening dungeon where you have like the flip switches and orange and blue, and you have to time that out to do certain puzzles and platforming. I thought that dungeon was really, really cool, and there's not really a moment like that in this game because they are trying to encourage a freedom for you to use all of the tools you've assembled, which doesn't really allow it to be based on a gimmick. One that did stand out to me was the ice dungeon. I think that was the Elden Temple, the Farron Temple. I think it was the Lanyiru Temple, now that I'm looking at it again. And that was the ice temple, and there was this mechanic where you had to melt and or freeze water, which then allowed you to access new areas of the dungeon. I thought that was neat. None of them are bad. None of them are frustrating or boring or tedious. I enjoyed all of them. I do think some of the early dungeons lead in is a bit too long. The go to this area, get this thing, go to area to get this thing, talk to this person is maybe 30 minutes too long. I found myself really eager to get into the actual dungeon and get out of the preamble. But that only happened once or twice. I think this game is really well paced in terms of I'm in this area, I talk to this person, I do the preamble, I do the dungeon. The typical Zelda format, I think, is really well honed here. And while this is still a Zelda game through and through, there is a shocking amount of platforming and linear exploration that I enjoyed. I found it refreshing because we don't really get many games like this. There are Zelda likes and they are in this format, but this definitely, due to the lack of actual combat, feels more exploration based, and that was refreshing. How the overall map works is pretty successful. I do think I found exploration not as rewarding as I would like it to be. Apologies for my dog barking. I think he sees someone outside. I am back. I had to stop my dog from harassing the poor poodle that was roaming around in the yard in front of our apartment. I think I was talking about exploration and how I didn't find it as rewarding as I wanted it to be. I often ventured off the beaten path to find extra hearts, to find other echoes, to find other hidden secrets. I would say that's about a 50% success rate. Often I found something worthwhile. More often than not, I found a chest that had some item that I didn't really need to use, and that was a little disappointing. Another thing I'll talk about in concert with this is the smoothie system. This is the equivalent to cooking food in Breath of the Wild: Tears of the Kingdom, where you can combine ingredients and make something more powerful. The cutscene or the segment where you make the smoothie is very cute. It's this tiki guy who's very funny and talks about his other smoothie shops and wanting to franchise them, and that all is entertaining. The actual process of making the smoothies is really tedious. There's a cutscene, yes, that you can skip, but it all takes too long, and you can only make one at a time, and I really wish there was a way to make multiples, because often I just wanted to make the same one five times, and having to do that five times individually was a bit frustrating. So we talked about dungeons, we've talked about echoes, we've talked about the story, we've talked about combat, and I've talked about exploration. That's kind of everything I wanted to touch on for this game. I don't think there is a big grand statement to make about this game. When I played Suicide Squad, I was really excited to review it because I felt, not necessarily that I had a different take, so to say, but that there were important takeaways from that game, things that were good or bad that I don't think everyone necessarily touched on. I didn't necessarily have that experience playing Echoes of Wisdom. I was like, dang, that's a pretty good Zelda game. And I frankly think it doesn't need to be more than that. This is a studio that is only, this is their first original Zelda game. They did a remake of Link's Awakening, and this is their first stab at it. And for a first stab at it, I think it's really damn good. I hope they get a chance to make a second one, whether it's an entirely new game, whether it's Link or Zelda, whether it's a direct sequel. I don't care. I just hope they get another shot at this. I think this is a solid entry in the Zelda franchise. I think if you enjoy Zelda games, you should give it a shot. One thing I haven't really talked about that isn't specific to this game, so I didn't feel that it was a top level thing to discuss. The Zelda casing is perfect. There is a whimsy, a joy, an elegance, an adventure to the Zelda games that is just unmatched. The music is perfect. The colors of enemies, of costumes, of friends, of each area, everything is just so fucking perfect. I can't get over the joy these games bring me when they do work on a gameplay and mechanics level. So I just want to give a stamp of recommendation to Echoes of Wisdom. And if you had interest, I definitely think it is worth giving a try. And I'm excited to see what they do next. Apologies once again. My dog rang the bell again. 15 minutes later. I don't know why, but I gave him treats. And hopefully he stops ringing the damn bell. That is it for my review of The Legend of Zelda Echoes of Wisdom. I hope you got something out of that. Like I said, I don't think I had any revolutionary takes or anything new to say, but I think it's worthwhile playing, and I think you should give it a shot. Moving on to Draft Day starring Kevin Costner, I figured we might as well do some housekeeping-like segments while we're here so that we don't get too far behind. I'm taking Sam's thunder a bit. No pickups, no drops, but Sam did have two scores. Assassin's Creed Shadows got him at 81. Pretty good. Not great. I'm sure he wanted maybe a few more points, but that's solid. One that it probably evened out then, because it got more points than he most likely assumed, definitely more than I assumed since I counterpicked it, was Xenoblade Chronicles X, which currently sits at an 87. That is 17 points for a remastered Wii U game that I think had like an 82 on the Wii U. That's a little frustrating for me. I should have definitely considered the Xenoblade bump that most people who would be reviewing a remaster would already be fans of the franchise. I'm a little disappointed in myself for that counterpick, but I can't say I'm excited for Sam. I'm actually pissed for Sam. This sucks. This year is definitely trending in his favor. I need a win soon. That is it for Draft Day starring Kevin Costner. Moving on to Game Watch and Listen. Guess what? We already talked about a game, and I didn't really listen to anything. So we're just going to be talking about watching. First, I'm going to talk about a movie that is Black Bag. Again, just keeping up on things. Don't want to get too far behind, not get to talk about it. Sam, I, and our whole family saw Black Bag this past weekend. That is a Steven Soderbergh directed kind of spy thriller. It is an hour and a half. It is tight. It is sexy. It is fun. I don't know how long it will be in theaters, but fuck if you get the chance, go and see it. It's a good ass time. It's a good mix of veteran actor and actresses who are phenomenal, and then some new faces that I love from other things. It is just so smart and tight. It really doesn't have any cruft. I was a really big fan of this movie. I think it has some fun things to say about marriage couched in a really fun thriller. I think the cat and mouse mystery actually works pretty well. And while I wouldn't say I was shocked by any twists or reveals, I think they work really well and they all make sense within the story. There are some really cool, I'm going to call set pieces. They're not set pieces in this movie. They're just conversations, but the conversations are so smartly written. I found myself snickering and laughing for a lot of this movie because of either how lines were delivered or the performance that was given in a situation. It's a good ass time. And I really wish this movie is going to make more money than it's going to make. And so I'm giving it my hard recommendation right now. In terms of TV, last night I just finished the hit Netflix show, Adolescence. This is a 4-episode miniseries about a family in Britain whose 13-year-old kid is accused of murdering someone else. I won't give any more information than that, not because what makes the show good is the mystery. I think that's actually the opposite of what makes the show so good, is that it takes a genre that's kind of been beaten to death, one that I enjoy quite a lot, but one that's been beaten to death over the past few years, and injects it with a unique perspective and a whole lot of empathy. It is not about the mystery. It is about why someone could get to that place to do something like that, what society has done to help or hurt that individual, how it affects those around them, how the systems in place either aid or don't aid that situation. It is all done in a one-shot gimmick. Every episode is done in one shot. To my knowledge, legitimately done in one shot, not cheated and cut in secret places. And while I don't think that's ultimately the most successful thing, I also don't think it's distracting. I think episodes 1, 3, and 4, it works really well. 2, it felt a bit gimmicky. There felt like moments they were trying to fill because they literally had to fill them moving from place to place. But ultimately, I think it's a success across the board. I teared up multiple times, which, if I've ever talked about in the show, is just, it's not a thing I frequently do with movies or TV. It happens on occasion. It just takes a lot. This show, and I'm trying to not be spoilery, even though that's not necessarily the kind of show this is. It is beyond empathetic. It is so understanding and willing to delve into the gray and complicated areas of being a teen, especially a teen in the social media age, being a parent of a teen in the social media age, and just how fucking difficult that must be. I think it is a hard watch, 100%. This is not an easy show to watch, but I think it is one that's worth watching. And that's it for the show. I don't really have much for you. I hope you have a great rest of your day. I hope you enjoyed the Super Mosier Brothers show, and I hope you enjoyed this episode. Shout out to Mitski Kawela for the podcast artwork. Shout out to Thombiverse Remix for the music. Send any comments, questions, concerns to our email. You know our email. Just text me. I don't fucking care. Subscribe, leave us a review. We appreciate it. We love you. Be kind. Jump up and be a goddamn superstar. Wahoo!